Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi. Thank you. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Girivada Dari. Jai Gopi Jana Balaba Girivada Dari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Gopi Jana Balaba Girivada Dari. Jai Gopi Jana Balaba Girivada Dari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Priya Vajakacharya Astotada Sata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Priya Vajakacharya Astotada Sata Shri Srimad His Divine Grace Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki. Ananta Kodi Vaishnava Brinda Ki. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. So we'll continue in our reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam. Today's class is from Canto 11, chapter 23. Is text 54? Is that what's on the board? 53? Okay, so we'll say the verse. Graha nimittam sukha dukkha yoschit. You can repeat. Kim atmano jasya janasya tevai. Grahaya grahasyaiva vadanti pidam. Krudyeta kasmai purushastatonya. Graha nimitam sukha dukkha yoschit. Kim atmano jasya janasya tevai. Grahaya grahasyaiva vadanti pidam. Krudyeta kasmai purushastatonya. Graha nimitam sukha dukkha yoschit. Kim atmano jasya janasya tevai. Grahaya grahasyaiva vadanti pidam. Krudyeta kasmai purushastatonya. Okay, word for word. Graha, the controlling planets. Nimittam, the immediate cause. Sukha dukkayo, of happiness and distress. Chit, if. Kim, what? Atmanaha, for the soul. Ajasya, who is unborn. Janasya, of that which is born. Te, those planets. Vai, indeed. Grahai, by other planets. Grahasya, of a planet. Eva, only. Vedanti, expert astrologers say. Pidam, suffering. Krudyeta, should become angry. Kasmai, at whom? Purusha, the living entity. Tataha, from that material body. Anyaha, distinct. So translation, and if we examine the hypothesis that the planets are the immediate cause of suffering and happiness, and also, where is the relationship with the soul who is eternal? After all, the effect of the planets applies only to things that have taken birth. Expert astrologers have moreover explained how the planets are only causing pain to each other. Therefore, since a living entity is distinct from these planets and from the material body, against whom should he vent his anger? So, please repeat. As we examine the hypothesis, and if we examine the hypothesis, that the planets are the immediate cause of suffering and happiness, then also where is the relationship with the soul who is eternal? After all, the effect of the planets applies only to things that have taken birth. Expert astrologers have moreover explained how the planets are only causing pain to each other. Therefore, since a living entity is distinct from these planets and from the material body, against whom should he vent his anger? So there's no purport for this verse, so we'll go to the next verse. Karsmatihe tu sukaduka yaschet kim atmanastadihi chada jandatve dehastvachit purusho yam suparna krudyeta kasmai nahi karma mulam. So I'll read the purport for that verse. If we assume that fruit of work is the cause of happiness and distress, we still are not dealing with the soul. The idea of material work arises when there is a spiritual actor who is conscious and a material body that undergoes the transformation of happiness and distress as a reaction to such work. Since the body has no life, it cannot be the actual recipient of happiness and distress, nor can the soul, who is ultimately completely spiritual and aloof from the material body. Since karma thus has no ultimate basis in either the body or the soul, at whom can one become angry? So the purport. The material body is composed of earth, water, fire, and air, just like bricks, stones, and other objects. Our consciousness, falsely absorbed in the body, experiences happiness and distress, and fruitive work, or karma, is performed when we falsely consider ourselves to be the enjoyers of the material world. False ego is thus the illusory combination within our minds of the self and the body, which are actually two separate objects. Since karma, our material work, is based on illusory consciousness, these activities are also illusory and have no factual basis in either the body or the soul. When a conditioned soul falsely considers himself to be the body and consequently the enjoyer of the material world, he tries to find pleasure in illicit connection with women. Such sinful activity is based on his false concept of being the body and thus the enjoyer of women and of the world. Since he is not the body, his activity of enjoying a woman does not actually exist. There is merely the interaction of two machines, namely the two bodies, and the interaction of the illusory consciousness of the man and the woman. The sensation of illicit sex occurs when the material body is falsely assimilated by the false ego as its own experience. Thus, the miserable or pleasurable reactions of karma ultimately act upon the false ego and not upon the body, which is composed of dull matter, nor upon the soul, which has nothing to do with matter. False ego is the illusory concoction of the mind. It is specifically this false ego that is suffering happiness and distress. The soul cannot become angry at others since he is not personally enjoying or suffering. Rather, the false ego is doing this. So, Amagana Timaranda Shajananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapanantikam Vanchakapa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayabhacha Patitanam Pavnyebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Maha. So I forgot to say Om Namo. So Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So Lord Krishna is continuing to speak to Sri Uddhava, and he's telling him the story of this Avanti Brahman. And so I'm going to go back a few verses just to kind of lead up to what were the verses we're talking about today. I'm going to go back to verse number 42. So verse number 42 says, the Brahmana said, these people are not the cause of my happiness and distress. Neither are the demigods, my own body, the planets, my past work, or time. Rather, it is the mind alone that causes happiness and distress and perpetuates the rotation of material life. So that verse leads into these verses that we're talking about now. So now in these verses, the Brahman is explaining these different categories that he mentioned, and these different categories, they try to explain what is actually the cause of happiness and distress. And as I was reading these verses, I noticed that they use the word chit, like in the last four or five verses. And chit means if. So what he's doing is that he's actually defeating these different reasons or arguments that people may call and may say causes them happiness and distress. Because he's saying, if this is true, then still we can't blame these things, because the soul is ultimately pure and the soul is actually different or aloof from the material body. So he's using that word if to kind of defeat these different reasons that people say might be cause of happiness and distress. So know in this world today, everyone is overwhelmed by different attachments. And we know these, according to the Bhagavad Gita, we know these attachments, they're born from desires to enjoy the objects of the senses and to enjoy them through the senses. And we know in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna, he asked Krishna, he says, if the soul is pure, if it's pure spirit, then what causes someone to commit these sinful acts? And sometimes even we commit them against our own will. And Krishna, he explains that when the soul, when we come from the spiritual world and we come into the material, this material energy, that eternal love that we have for Krishna, because of the mode of passion, that eternal love actually turns into lust. And then Krishna tells Arjuna, he says, I'll tell you where these enemies, this lust, this enemy of the soul, I can tell you where it actually is. He said it's the sitting places of lust are the senses, the mind, and the intelligence. And he says actually the mind is actually the center of all these activities. The mind is the one that sees something and thinks, I would like to have that. We know in an earlier verse it's described that the mind is described as being like a mirror reflecting the images of the material world. And we know that once the mind becomes lusty, then it also affects the intelligence. And then we know that the intelligence is actually called the next door neighbor of the soul. So when the intelligence becomes overwhelmed by lust, this is what causes us to acquire. This is the cause of false ego. Therefore, when this happens, we start to think that we are this body. And the spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying all types of material activities. And we also mistake this enjoying propensity, trying to enjoy all these objects, which we mistake them as being what is real happiness. But actually these attachments, they're the actual cause of our suffering. And it's actually the cause of repeated birth, old age, disease, and death. And Lord Kapiladeva, he explains that this attachment, it's actually the greatest entanglement of the spirit soul. He said it's due to these attachments alone that the soul is degraded into a state of complete forgetfulness of its true spiritual nature. And therefore, because of this, we identify with this phenomenon of that we are the body and we go through this repetition of birth and death. And we know, as it's mentioned in purport today, that what of all the weapons that Maya has, what is her most powerful weapon? Her most powerful weapon is sex life. And Srila Prabhupada says it's like sometimes when the criminals, they're put in shackles or chains. Similarly, persons who are disobedient to the laws of the Lord, we're shackled by this sex life. This is, they say love makes the world go round. But no, it's actual. In this material world, it's sex life that makes the world go round. Everything today is, everything they try to sell, everything is based on sex life. And Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna, he created all these different universes to give the spirit souls who we misuse our independence. He's to give us the opportunity to return to this, to the material world, to the spiritual world. But most people today, what do? They turn to God because they want God to satisfy their material desires. Even though they see all around them, they see birth, old age, disease, and death happening, they think it's not going to happen to them. Just like the Pandavas when Yudhisthira answered the questions of, actually it was his father that came out of the lake, that the most amazing thing is that people see birth, old age, disease, and death, and they still think it's not going to happen to them. But instead of approaching God for loving devotion, which we know is actually the only means that that we can satisfy the longings of the soul, we approach God asking for material benedictions. And these things only entangle us further in the suffering of material existence. And it said even if these benedictions come from God, they still, ultimately, they're going to cause us pain. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he once told a story about this sannyasi. There was a sannyasi that was walking through the jungle, and he was a very advanced sannyasi, but he still had a few material desires. So as he was walking and walking, he thought, you know, I'm really getting tired, so I'm going to pray to the Lord to send me a horse. So he prayed to Krishna, oh Krishna, please send me a horse. And sure enough, after a little while, this horse came up, and it had a bridle, and it was ready to ride, you know, but it was a female horse. So he said, oh, thank you, Krishna. So he got on the horse, and he got very attached to the horse, and he was riding the horse. But then after a while, he realized that the horse was pregnant, that it was going to have a baby horse. So the horse had a baby, and so then the man became very attached to the baby, and so he was walking through the jungle, and he couldn't ride the horse because she had just given the baby, and the little horse couldn't walk, so he started carrying the horse on his shoulders, and he was walking alongside, he carried the little baby horse on his shoulder, and he was walking alongside the horse, and after a while, he was struggling and struggling, and finally, he said, oh, Lord, what have you done? I asked for a horse so I could ride. Now I'm carrying the horse. So it's just an example of how actual, you know, if you ask for some material desire, ultimately that desire is actually going to be cause you pain. So in the previous chapter, we know that Krishna, he's begun to explain to Uddhava how the higher self can actually act as a spiritual guide to the individual self through direct experience, just like this Avanti Brahman. He could see so many things that he saw reminded him of Krishna. And in order to illustrate this point, Lord Krishna, he begins to tell Uddhava how one time King Yadu, he was walking around the kingdom, and he saw this young Brahman laying on the ground, and this Brahmin was an avadut, and an avadut is someone who's actually given up all their material possessions, all their worldly responsibilities, and they don't have any fixed home. They just wander and around, and they just constantly meditate on Krishna. So King Yadu, he saw this young man, and he seemed to be so peaceful and so happy, and even though he had no material possessions and people were treating him so bad, still he seemed to be like he was experiencing great ecstasy. So King Yadu, he asked him, he said, how is it that you have no possessions and people are treating you so cruelly? How is it that you're so happy? And this Brahmin, he answered him by saying this verse. This verse is from the seventh chapter of the 11th canto. It says, the Brahmin told him, he said, I have had many teachers, all of whom have taken up residence in my intelligence. And by making use of this intelligence, I am now able to wander throughout this world in complete liberty. And Srila Prabhupada says, he reminds us that the more we want to control or try to control, the more we want to be the controller, the more that we just get more mired up in this material energy. And the more you think you're the controller, the more you feel like, well, you know, I'm actually the Supreme Lord. The whole world revolves around me. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada says this is a very dangerous position, because this is also one of Maya's weapons, that she intoxicates us with our false ego. And we know that in the past, this Brahmin, he became so intoxicated by his money and by his power that he treated people so badly. He He just simply wanted everyone to be obedient to him and serve him. And this way, his family, they didn't even care for him anymore. And the only reason they stayed around and they liked him is because he was wealthy and he was actually providing for them. But by the arrangement of Providence, a change came into this Brahmin's life. All of a sudden, all at once, all these things started happening. His property, his house burned down, his fields of agriculture, they were taken away by the government. Thieves came and they stole everything, almost everything he had. And then his family, when they saw all this was happening, they took whatever was left. And everybody was gone. And because he mistreated his family so bad, and they saw him as, he can't give us sense gratification anymore, then they left. So in this way, he had no one. Everyone had abandoned him. And this Avanti Brahmin, when King Yadu saw him, he was just lying on the ground, and he had no home, no money, no food. And so there's a saying that you go from rags to riches. Well, he did just the opposite. He went from riches to rags. And now he was all alone, and he had nothing. He had no one to help him and no one to turn to. And so he was crying, and he just kept lying on the ground, and he didn't know what to do or where to go. And as long as he remained in that intoxicated state of wealth, he can never understand that the real wealth was actually in his heart. It's the same wealth that we all have in all our hearts. But in this condition of total lamentation, he actually turned to Krishna. He turned to Krishna in his heart. And once he surrendered, he experienced actual happiness, true happiness. And therefore, he could understand what is the cause of all these things that are happening to him, all this suffering. And it's described that people would throw rocks at him, so much so that his body would just be bleeding. And they would insult him with the harshest, cruelest words. And they were calling him like a parasite, a beggar, a useless person in society. And he would go and try to beg food. And when he would be about to eat, they would even pass urine in his begging bowl. So these, you know, you can imagine, I mean, when somebody insults us, it pierces the heart. And so these so many things was happening to him. And sometimes they would even tie him up in chains, and they would treat him like he was an animal. And in this way, he was the constant object of, like, ridicule and disgrace. But what was in this Brahmin's heart? Even though all these things were happening to him, he was happy because he had given his heart to Krishna. And if he hadn't done this, if he hadn't given his heart to Krishna, he probably would have died because, you know, none of us could take anywhere near what he was experiencing. But because he had given his heart to Krishna, he was just in complete bliss. And he was thanking Krishna for everything that was going on. He was saying, Krishna, you're so kind, you're so merciful. He said, the things that I've done in the past, all my sinful ways and activities that I've done, he said, I deserve a million times more than what you're giving me now. He said, you're just giving me a little touch of my karma, just a little taste of my karma, just to keep me focused on you and just to keep me focused on you alone. And therefore, he said, whatever happens in this world, he said, I'm grateful to be your servant. He said, let them say what they want. Let them do what they want. He said, and in this way, this Brahmin, he became completely Krishna conscious, just thinking of Krishna. So in that condition that where he was hopeless and he was helpless, then this realization awakened in his heart that there's only one person that I can actually turn to now. Everyone else had left him. He was completely abandoned. And he knew that there was only one person he could turn to, and that was the Paramatma, the super soul within the heart. And he surrendered, and he became an exalted Mahatma. And he began to offer these beautiful, beautiful prayers in the glorification of the Lord, thanking him for taking everything away from him. And it's said that you shouldn't really judge someone by the way that they look. You know, it says you can tell a fool when he opens his mouth, when he speaks. So this Brahmin, when he started to speak, he could tell that King Yadu could tell he was a very, very advanced devotee. So I'll tell this one kind of a joke. There was this man that came to this church, and this this church was a very affluent area, and you know, kind of an uppity type church, and they were very proud of their church because most of the people were very wealthy. And so this man came, and he wasn't dressed very nicely. So one of the deacons, one of the deacons in the church, he came up to this man. And he said, what do you want here? You know, because he wasn't dressed very nice. And he said, well, I prayed to God, and God told me to come to this church. And so the deacon said, well, maybe you should leave and pray to God again, and maybe he'll give you a different answer. So so the man went away, and then the next Sunday he came back again, and the deacon came up to him and said, what are you doing here? And he said, well, I prayed to God again. And he said, what did God tell you? He said, well, I prayed to God, and I told God that they wouldn't let me in this church. And God told me, well, don't worry about it. I've been trying to get in that church myself for the last many years. And he said, I still haven't made it, you know. So we can't always judge someone by how they look. So when Lord Chaitanya, when he took sannyas, one of the first things he did was to remember and sing these beautiful prayers of this Avanti Brahman. He would pray, oh, my Lord, whatever my condition, I am taking shelter of you who is seated in my heart, and I am following the path of great authorities of Krishna consciousness, the previous acharyas. He says, in this way, there is nothing greater than this. So most people today, they look upon this world as a place. We all do. We all look upon this world as a place to enjoy the objects of the world. But this Brahmin, he had a completely different approach in the world. He told King Yadu, he said, I've given up looking on the world with a view to accepting or rejecting things in terms of their potential sense gratification. He said, instead, I look upon them as teachers who can give me guidance. Other people are deprived of service to the guru because they are on the mental platform. I, on the other hand, wander through the world taking shelter of my fixed intelligence. Therefore, I have been able to find 24 gurus who have helped me attain loving service to the Supreme Lord. So he's telling King Yadu, through his direct experience of the world, that he's found 24 gurus through his intelligence that have helped him in his Krishna consciousness. And after he said that, the Brahmin began to describe these different teachers, or gurus, along with the lessons that he learned from each of them. And I'll just name the first five. The first five of these were the principal elements: earth, water, fire, air, and ether. These are things that helped him remember Krishna. So we'll just talk a little bit about those. So he said earth. The earth taught him tolerance, the earth and the trees, because no matter how much we may pollute or abuse the earth or drill holes in it trying to get oil or so many things, it still provides us the necessities of life. And the trees, they give us fruits, they give us flowers, they give us herbs, and they also give us shade. If you remember the Goswamis, most of the Goswamis, when they stayed, where did they stay? They stayed under a tree, because the tree would give them shade in the summertime, and it, actually a tree puts off heat in the cold. So the trees, they do so much for us, and even when we cut the trees down, they still help us by giving firewood. So the trees, they taught him tolerance. And he said that by studying the nature of water, one can understand the symptoms of a pure devotee. He said a saintly person is just like pure water because he's free of all contamination. And just by seeing or hearing from a saintly person, a living entity becomes purified, just like when someone takes a shower with pure water. So just by seeing or, you know, we've heard of moments, you know, a second with a pure devotee can purify you. So this is what the water taught him. And he compares the fire to be like the super soul or the Paramatma in the heart. Just like fire is, we know fire is present in wood. And when you, if it's a spark there, when you blaze it, what happens? It'll blaze up. So the Supreme Lord is present in the heart of all the living entities. And when we fan that spark by chanting Hare Krishna, or hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, or serving the devotees, then we're fanning that spark. And what happens when we do that? Then this flame comes up. Krishna notices this, and this flame comes up and it burns our material desires away. So this is how he saw fire. And he learned from the wind or air that the art of moving throughout the world without becoming attached to things in the world. We know, just like the wind, sometimes when it blows, it can, if it blows over like Srimati Radharani has gardenias on her right now, and if you were to walk by and the breeze kind of came through, you would smell such a nice, beautiful smell. Or the wind can also, if it goes over garbage, what kind of smell does it take also? It takes such a bad odor. But still, whatever, it still never changes its actual nature. Still, the nature of the wind stays the same. It's not affected by these things. And it says, similarly, a devotee should always remain steady and not become distracted by good things or bad things that are going to come in on their spiritual path. Because just because we become a devotee, we chant Hare Krishna, that doesn't mean that we're not going to have some hardships in the future. And we're going to have some good things happen. So we should just remain steady in our Krishna consciousness and remain steady on the path. And the sky, or the ether, it says, just like everything is, all the planets in the universe, everything is situated within space or the sky. But still, the sky remains separate and it's unaffected from all these things. So this sky reminded him that similarly, the spirit soul, even though it pervades the whole body and it seems to undergo so many changes when the body changes, still, the soul is actually separate. It's different from the body, just like the sky is separate. So these five things are some of the things that reminded him of Krishna. And I was just thinking that when I first became a devotee, devotees would, every time they would take a drink of water, they would say, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. So I was thinking, if how many times do we drink water a day? Maybe a dozen times or something like that. So if you say Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu when you drink water, then at least you're thinking of Krishna 12 times a day, you know, every time. And there's other things also that can remind us when you, just like we're talking about, this is kind of a springtime of the year. When you go out and you see flowers, beautiful flowers, smell the aroma, you think of Srimati Radharani and the gopis, how they offered so many flowers to Krishna. Or you see a beautiful blue sky. So many things during the day can actually remind us of Krishna. And what does Krishna say? He said, you know, always remember me and never forget me. So we should try to, you know, have, like, just like this Brahmin had so many things that reminded him of Krishna, we can also try to do this throughout the day. So then this Brahmin, he said, there's also a 25th guru that I have. And who can say what his, does anyone know what his 25th guru was? It's something we all have. It was his own body. He said, also my own body is actually my guru, because he said, and then he quoted this verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, with the help of his creative powers, the Lord created this visible world with its trees, serpents, animals, birds, and other creatures. But his heart remained unsatisfied. Then he created man, who alone possesses the intelligence to see Brahman, and he was delighted. So the lesson that he learned from his body is that the supreme truth that lies behind this creation is actually a supreme person who takes a human form in order to enjoy eternal bliss with his devotees. There's a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that says, of all Lord Krishna's transcendental activities, his earthly pastimes in the human form are most excellent. For this is his actual eternal identity. In this form, he dresses as a cowherd boy, plays the flute, blossoms with ever-fresh youthfulness, and dances expertly. His activities resemble those of a human being. So this is how his body reminded him that actually behind all of this creation is a supreme Lord, and that supreme Lord is a person. So this Brahmin, he told Maharaj Yadu, he said, I'm just always meditating on Krishna. He said, whatever Krishna puts in my mouth, I eat. And whatever he doesn't put in my mouth, then what can I do? He said, Krishna is in control. So why should I endeavor for anything separate than trying to remember Krishna? And so I was remembering in the Bible when Jesus, when he asked his followers to follow him, they asked him, well, if we follow you, then how are we going to eat? How are we going to maintain ourselves? And then Jesus said, don't you see the birds in the sky? He said, how Krishna provides for them. Don't you see the flowers? How they have clothes more beautiful than King Solomon because of the beautiful flowers. He said, so if Krishna is providing for these entities, why do you think he's not going to provide for you if you surrender to him? So this was out of the Bible. It's pretty much the same thing that we read in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So this Brahmin, he had pretty much everything he wanted and more simply because he had faith and trust in Krishna. And His Holiness, I was reading His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj says, he says, if you don't have faith and trust in Krishna, then you are on your own, my friend. He said, you have to make it in this world. It's called the world of school of hard knocks. And somehow or other, you have to provide for yourself. He said, but Krishna says, if you have faith in me and you trust me, then I will provide protection for whatever you have and I will carry whatever you lack. So this doesn't mean, though, that because this Brahmin was just wandering in the world and really not taking, you know, having any responsibilities or anything, that we should be irresponsible. But it means that we should live a simple life and we should make Krishna consciousness and spiritual life our priority in life. We have to do whatever the needful is to survive and to take care of our family and make ends meet. But the first and foremost consideration is our spiritual life, our spiritual prosperity, and the lives of the ones that we love. It says simple living and high thinking means that we have to have a balance. We have to create a balance in our life. We do our duty, but we're not so greedy and not so illusioned to think that by these efforts, these are things that are going to give us happiness. So a wise person sees that the actual problems of life are birth, old age, disease, and death. And Srila Prabhupada says human life begins when you start to understand these things. When you start to actually understand these things and try to solve these things, you know, how to get out of this material world, then your actual human life starts. So you may be thinking that, okay, so does that mean that I have to lose everything, that I have to be insulted by people, that I have to be rocks thrown at me or whatever to become a nice devotee? No, this was the natural condition of these people in their lives. But we have to take this into context that of how Krishna is speaking this to Uddhava. We know Uddhava, he was a prince. And Krishna, he didn't want Uddhava to give up everything. He wasn't telling him that. He didn't want Uddhava to be a failure in the world, but he just wanted to impress on him, and by telling him, impress on us, the importance of giving up our false ego or giving up our false pride, giving up this envious attitude of trying to exploit Krishna's energies, and trying to learn how to become humble. And humble doesn't mean that we say, oh, I'm the most fallen, or you offer your obeisances. Humility comes from the heart. To really want to serve others and try not to be the enjoyer. There's a saying that humility doesn't mean thinking less of yourself. It means thinking of yourself less. So that's real humility, that we want to serve others. We don't want praise. We just want to, by serving Krishna's devotees, you're actually serving Krishna. So this is what humility is. So what is this, in these verses, this Avanti Brahman, what is he trying to teach us? Well, he's saying the same thing that we've heard so many times from Srila Prabhupada's classes, so many classes from Srimad Bhagavatam, the Bhagavad Gita. He's trying to tell us that we can never satisfy the longings of the soul and become truly happy until we surrender and understand that we're not this body and that we're pure spirit soul and that we have to give up these material attachments and we have to dovetail those attachments to becoming attached to Krishna. And only then can you really attain true happiness. So that's this verse, and the story of the Avanti Brahman will continue in other verses. But this is just another way of, you know, when you hear something over and over and over and over again, sometimes it starts to sink in. So, you know, he's telling us again that we're not this body, that that we have to, you know, eventually give up these material attachments. Otherwise, we're going to stay in this cycle of birth and death. So I'll stop here and ask if anyone has any questions or comments. I don't think so, Prabhu. All right, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank everyone for coming.